Where is he?
Where are you?
Skull Rock. Do you know it?
Hello, this is Stacy reporting live from Skull Rock Broadcast. I am joined by...
Hello, this is Megan. Welcome back to our Stranger Things podcast. And welcome back because we are finally circling back to our Lover's Lake deep dive into season 3. So I'm super excited. I know you watched this episode back in March, Stacy.
Yep, I might have, shot my load a little too early, but I went back and rewatched it yesterday, so it's all fresh in the old noggin.
Yeah, I rewatched it yesterday, too. I remember back in March being like, Stacy, it's going to be a couple months before we get back to this, because we were a little busy. We had the Joe stuff and just... Lifing. And so we're excited because it's kind of feeling, I don't know about you, it's I feel like it should feel like summer because it's June now, but also it was kind of cold this weekend. So
it's freezing. Yeah.
I'm like, okay. Okay, weather. But yeah, I mean, I love June, so I'm super excited.
Birthday month.
It's my birthday month. It's also Pride Month. So happy Pride Month, everybody.
Happy Pride.
And yeah, great month to get back into season 3. If we do well, we can get Battle of Starcourt released on July 4th. So that's the goal.
Here's to hoping, man.
That's the goal. Because 4th of July is a Friday this year.
Nice.
Which is podcast day. So that's exciting. But something pretty exciting happened yesterday.
So it was... It was, am I saying it wrong?
That was beautiful once again.
That's beautiful. We're going to keep it to that.
I think when you sing it like that, it just is perfect.
It's beautiful. It sounds like birds, you know? And it was Netflix's big like showcase event where they go live and they're basically showing everything that's coming up. And you kind of hit the nail on the head with our previous episode. You were like, I don't think we're necessarily going to get a teaser or a trailer, we're gonna get something. And we sure did. What did we get?
Yeah, so I really wouldn't even call it a teaser. I think we're mostly calling it a teaser for lack of a better word, but it's definitely not a trailer. But it was what I said what we were gonna get at the bare minimum, and I would be happy. And we got our release dates. That's pretty crazy. I woke up this morning like, did that happen? Like, do we actually know? Like, I felt like I was like hungover this morning and I didn't like drink last night. Like,
big time. Yep.
But we found out that season 5 is coming in November, the day
November
after 26. Thanksgiving. The day before Thanksgiving. November 26th. Yep. This year is the day before Thanksgiving. And it did come out a little later in like a post from like Stranger Things TV that all of the episodes are going to be released at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I don't know if you saw this. So
really? Okay.
It'll be like the night before Thanksgiving at 8 o'clock and the whole world is going to get it at the exact same time. So like, it might not be the 26th in some places, depending on where you are in the world.
That's crazy.
And it's not like that midnight release where you have to like stay up till midnight. So I do kind of like that. And then we're going to get volume 2 on
Christmas. The gift that keeps on giving.
Merry Christmas. Santa Claus is bringing us the volume 2 of season 5. But that's not all. Because we are going to get the final episode on New Year's Eve. So it is 3 parts, which was the rumor that we had been going back and forth. And like we said, we were like, bring it on, like spread it out as much as possible. We're not really getting it spread out very much because it's just it's like 5 weeks, I guess, basically, which I kind of love it. Like,
you have to wait that long.
But it does make you kind of have to digest it a little bit and not binge all 8 episodes at one time. So, yeah, I'm pumped. I I'm just looking forward to the holidays so much now. Like, I always love Thanksgiving through New Year's. It's like one of my favorite times of the year. And this is just going to be insane. Like, I'm
nothing
very
says
excited.
The holidays more than the upside down.
Exactly. It's going to be a Stranger Things Christmas, Stranger Things holiday season. And I was literally just like thinking about like, should I like make my like Christmas decorations like Stranger Things themed? Like,
yes.
I think we have to do like all the things. So
gonna
it's
be cookies. We're gonna do the whole enchilada. Get ready, guys.
Yeah, it's bittersweet because it also makes it feel real that it's actually gonna end.
I know.
It's insane. Like, it's been over 3 years since the last season, and we've been obsessed for those 3 years.
Yeah.
I know I have been like, I was not obsessed before that. So it's like the past 3 years, just like, this is just like the culmination of like that obsession. And it's like, I don't know. Like, I don't even need it, but I want it. Like, but then I don't want it. It's all very
confusing. It's a bittersweet kind of thing.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. If we have time later, are going to talk a little bit more about our thoughts on like some of the new footage from the teaser yesterday, because a lot of it was old footage. But I think there's still like some to analyze and like what footage they decided to include.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely interesting. So we'll see how much time we have for that later, but we can also talk about that because I'm sure we're not going to get like anything else like right away. Like we talked about last week, we probably won't get like an actual trailer until much closer to the season coming out. I don't know that they'll really give us too many teasers like they did with season 4.
We might get something on Stranger Things Day if I had to guess, because it's almost like a few weeks away from the actual release date.
That would be like the perfect time for the actual trailer, because it's like 3 weeks before it actually comes out.
Mm-hmm.
That's my call right now, that we'll get the actual trailer on Stranger Things Day. And then I don't know that there'll be like a volume 2 trailer, because it's so close, like it's like less than a month, but I don't know. We'll see. But over the summer, I don't know if we'll get much else, but yeah, it's kind of interesting. I was thinking about how like the cast is going to have to kind of do press around the holidays.
Yeah.
Which I feel like they've probably known that, you know, for a while.
Yeah.
And they've had to keep that secret. So that's pretty cool. But lots to think about, lots to talk about. And it was a very exciting evening.
Certainly was.
Do you want to get started talking about the next episode of season 3?
Let's do this.
I was kind of trying to think back, because it had been so long since we'd watched the episodes in season 3. So the last episode before this was the case of
the missing
lifeguard. Yeah. So I like was re-listening to like a little bit of our episode for that one before I watched the new episode. So that was like that whole like the storm is brewing, right?
Yeah.
Like kind of setting up this mystery. And then I think this episode kind of continued that. But it had more of like the cast coming back together too. So that was kind of like my overall read of like where this is narratively in the season. But it's a great episode.
Really great. Very intense towards the end.
Yeah.
But so we open to Max's house in the rain. Ella's brushing her teeth and thinks back on the memories of the void and Billy and Heather. And then Max holds up two comics as Ella's getting into bed, the Green Lantern and Wonder Woman. I tried to find out what exact issues they were, couldn't quite pinpoint it. So if anybody knows that.
Yeah, I took a photo so I could try to like look like at what issues they were too. But then there was actually a couple different Wonder Woman comics on the bed too. And I don't know which one they ended up like deciding to read, but The storm was still going at this point, which
oh yeah,
it was like the whole pre-credits was like still that evening of the day of that day of the last episode, and like the thunder clapping for like the transitions here mm-hmm. in the scene was pretty cool. But like you said, Elle is still worried about what was going on with Heather and Billy, but it seemed like Max just kind of like wanted to just brush it off because she wanted to like believe the best yeah. about her stepbrother. And she kind of like is trying to use these comics as like a distraction for Elle and herself. And they decide on Wonder Woman.
Which I love that she goes, this is why you can't just hang out with Mike, and starts schooling her on, you know, Princess Diana and Paradise Island and stuff. So pretty interesting. But then we switch to Mrs. Driscoll, yeah, loaded up by the paramedics. She is hysterical. She keeps yelling, I have to go back. I have to go back. And Callahan, one of the deputies, is waiting on the porch with Jonathan and Nancy. And they're all pretty freaked out. And he kind of demands, as the, you know, elderly woman's loaded up into the back of the ambulance during the storm, what the hell is going on?
Yep. So again, thunder with the transitions. And then we get one more scene before the credits. And we're at Brimborn Steelworks, and Tom is waking up, and he sees Heather. He's telling her that she doesn't have to do this, and she is flayed already. So she says, like, there's no stopping it. You'll see. And then Billy takes off, like, the mom's gag
mm-hmm.
and says, like, try not to move. And then the monster comes out. Is this the first time we see it?
We've heard it before. This is the first time we've actually seen it, which yeah. right before this scene, we do see the ambulance go by, and Mrs. Driscoll, almost like a magnet, is trying to like reach out in the direction of the steelworks, like yeah. she's drawn to it. So we then see like Tom and his wife obviously see this dripping monster emerge from the darkness, and these two like tentacles shoot out covering their faces, and it looks like something's getting pumped into them. As a very, like, stone-faced, you know, Billy and Heather are watching on, no emotion, credits. Yeah.
It's so gross, like...
Yeah, ew.
It's definitely, like, the most, like, kind of, like, body horror, like, that we see in the whole show, I would say. Like,
big time.
With, like, season 3 and, like, these, like, people being, like, taken over by this monster. Yeah, it's gross. So we get the credits, and the next morning, the rain has stopped. Finally,
stopped.
The storm has blown through, and Hopper wakes up at his cabin. So I think that's kind of like he woke up at his cabin in the last episode, too.
Very hungover.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. But instead of being hungover this time, he's kind of recovering from being attacked.
Yeah. He got the living shit kicked out of him. Yeah.
And Joyce is there.
And there's, like, this tender moment at first
yeah.
when he's first coming to. And they kind of, like, lean in. But then Hopper kind of, you know, mood killer. He vomits into a bowl, which, yeah, beautiful. And I love that she asks if he remembers anything. And he's, like, only a thug attacking me. And then blacking out. I love the line of him asking, like, how the hell did we get back? And she's, like, very slowly. So imagining, like, tiny Joyce lugging, like, a completely knocked out Hopper, like, back to the cabin. Like, this woman's a badass.
Yeah. And I love that she was like giving him like pills, like whatever meds she's giving him. But then he starts to get up and like she tries to stop him. And then he realizes that he's naked and he's like, where are my clothes?
Which I do love that she's like, she points outside and she left the uniform outside the whole night and it's just soaking wet and stuff. So he doesn't have much use for those. But I'm like, look at you, Joyce. You undressed him.
Well, yeah.
Okay, I see you. I see you.
I know. But then they talk a little bit about the thug who attacked him, and Joyce is trying to get him to, like, she's showing him this license plate number that she wrote down. And she was like, couldn't we track it or whatever? And he was like, that would take too long if we even, like, could do it. And
she has a bunch of dashes in it, too. She's like, it could have been yeah. this or that. And it's kind of yeah. like, as a kid, I used to think that if you got somebody's license plate, like, you had them. That was it, yeah. baby. And I love that he's like, you should stick to sales. And he makes a good point as he's getting dressed in, you know, his little bathroom bedroom area. He's like, what's the likelihood this person would even register a car? And she's like, it wasn't a car. And then
he has like a light bulb moment there.
Kills me yeah. when he pulls back the curtain and he's wearing his like, you know, Miami Vice, you know, like, you know, it's cutting edge fashion that he was going to wear at Enzo's. And she's like so thrown off guard. She's like, what are you wearing?
What are you wearing? Joyce, that was his date outfit. Come on.
Hello. I love that he didn't let it go to waste. And she says like, oh, it was a motorcycle. So that was like, look at that. Yeah. And then we cut to where?
So Max's house again, and she and Elle are sleeping in bed, and you hear Lucas calling over the walkie. So she keeps calling and calling. So she gets up and like tells him to shut up and turns the walkie off. But the boys like are really trying to reach them, and so they
loved
call
her sheet
her.
Set. By the way,
yeah, her
very
whole
cute bedroom.
Bedroom is just such a vibe.
Such a vibe.
I love it. Yeah. But Mike is the one on the phone. So he's like, don't hang up. And he says that something bad happened, that they need to come over, that our very lives could be in danger, like very
dramatic.
That
would get you out of bed quickly. Yeah.
I like how they do mention that they've been trying to contact Dustin too, but that he's not answering.
Listen, he's got other things on his plate. So he's at the roof of the mall and Josie doesn't have his radio on and he's spying on the men and he kind of like there's a voiceover of him explaining to Robin and Steve later in the back of Scoops that there's only one way into this hidden room where they keep wheeling in these delivery boxes that and the only way to get in is to open it with a key card. And there's this guy with a machine gun guarding the like room. So Robin states that there's got to be a way in. And I love that like Steve like just literally him like blowing into his hat and stuff that always killed me. And right away, like, I think this was probably roughly around the time I think he was trying, like maybe a crush was developing because he was trying to play it really cool with her. And he's like, oh, well, I'll just take him out. And she's like, take who out? And he's like, oh, the Russian guard. Like, it would be easy. I'd just sneak up behind him. And he does the little like sneaking motion and, you know, lift the car key off him. And Dustin, right away, who's the realist, is like, did you not hear the part about the massive gun? And I love Steve just blankly looking at him going, yes, Dustin, I did. That's why I'd be. And he does the finger motion, sneaking, and he does a little walk across the table. And Dustin asks Steve, all right, and to be honest, has he ever actually won a fight? And Steve tries to say that was one time, and Dustin reminds him, no, twice, Jonathan, year prior. And Steve tries to say that doesn't count and it wasn't how it looked. And Dustin goes, really? Because it looks like he beat the living shit out of you. And Robin's kind of amused and she's listening to the bickering before looking up and seeing something. And that's when kind of she has a light bulb moment.
Yeah, I love this scene. And it's funny that you point out that maybe he was sort of starting to have a crush on Robin. And that's why he was being so like cocky and like, because I mean that's pretty brave to like say that you're gonna literally like try to take out a Russian guard like
yeah.
Steve like really, but he is so attractive and like I feel like they're like really playing up like his attractiveness, like he's sitting there with like his shorts on and his leg hiked up on the chair and like just looks beautiful, is twirling his hat like, and I don't know that I've ever really like put two and two together that like maybe he's trying to impress Robin and that's like why he's like looking like that. I don't
know. Yeah.
But it is like to his credit, he was angry with Jonathan, but Jonathan was the one that like, I don't know. I do feel like he wasn't trying to like fight Jonathan.
No.
Like, John, he was being a dick, and
yeah.
That's why Jonathan ended up, like, fighting him. But he didn't really fight back that much in
no.
that fight. So, like, that's just, you know, we like to
I
defend
love his justification.
Season 1.
Oh, yeah. Team Steve.
Defend Steve and one Steve.
But I love that, like, Robin, she gets this light bulb moment and she right away goes, that just might work. And she runs out, but she grabs some of the tip money. And I love freaking Steve. Right away, Steve's like,
half of that's mine.
Half of that's mine, you know? And she's like, you know, I want you, I'm going to find a safe way to get inside that room, a safe way. You know, sling ice cream, behave, and don't get beat up. And I love her adorable, like, little salute. She goes, be back in a jiff. And I love Dustin licking Steve's scooper. And he's like, come on, man, not my scooper.
Not my scooper.
Which is reason, like, 5051, why the Board of Health would have definitely shut down Scoops Ahoy for multiple violations. But, hey, it was the 80s. People still smoked on planes. And I just love his little, like, cute, like, cowboy twirl before he puts it in its, like, holster of, like, his belt. Yeah. Like, what a tool. Yeah. I love
it. Holster. So then we transition back to or over to the Hawkins Post. Mm-hmm. So Nancy and Jonathan are sitting outside of Tom's office, and Officer Callahan comes out and Snitch. Is kind of saying, like, I just thought you should know. So when they go into Tom's office, he's pissed. He's yelling at them. He's saying that, like, they're a small paper, but they have, like, the trust of the community, and that Nancy has, like, broken this trust. The camera work in this scene, though,
Levy did such a great job.
Stood out to me because, like, Tom kicks the desk and it's like almost like the camera like is getting kicked, and then the whole rest of the scene is like crooked mm-hmm. on the screen, which is very like jarring, and like and it kind of like just adds to like the vibe of the whole scene, because he's telling them that, like, she's a paranoid schizophrenic, her family is pissed, like, so.
Which, if I was Jonathan, especially when Nancy starts yelling back, like, she would have died, you know, if you weren't there, I would have literally let the ground swallow me whole.
Yeah. Nope. I mean, and they get fired.
They do.
I mean, I do kind of understand.
Yeah,
I get it. To some extent. But also, Tom does not look like he's feeling too great. Which
no.
We know why, but like, later Nancy has some interesting theories about that.
My God. But yeah, I do love it. Sean Levy, excuse me. He did such a great job directing
that
scene.
That's why we always just say Levy.
Levy. Which is funny. The show, The Studio, there's a scene where they make a joke about him and they say Levy. So I'm like, is it Levy? You know, the debate will continue going on.
What's the Schitt's Creek guy's last name?
Levy.
So I think it's Levy. Because I think it's not, he doesn't say it the same thing as them.
Because right away I'm like, have we been saying it the wrong way? The debate continues, guys.
Yeah.
But he definitely could tell that he directed this episode, because it's just like these little shots, these little flares that really make it go the extra mile. But there's this adorable shot of Elle riding double with Max, which I've never rode double. I was always a very tall kid. My ass would have gone right over the handlebars. But they're on their way to Mike's house.
Yeah. So they go to Mike's house. And when they get there, Will is explaining kind of what he's been feeling. So the way we left the boys last night was Will had been upset and they were looking for him. And they find him by Castle Byers, where he's kind of like destroying it. But as he's there and he hears them yelling for him, he feels like that sensation again, like mm-hmm. on the back of his neck. And he's kind of explaining to all of them what it feels like. And I do love this part of the scene, because he's like, you know, when you drop on a roller coaster, and Max is like, yeah, Mike's like, sure. And Elle's like, no.
Like, it's so good.
Yeah, it's very well like timed, like but he's like, yeah, it's just like this sinking feeling, but even worse. And he says that he's felt this before when the mind flare was close. And Elle's like, well, I closed the gate. But then Will was like, what if he never left? What if we locked him out here with us?
Which I love that he does kind of like a visual like demonstration with the charcoal and the piece of paper. I'm a visual learner. So I like that he kind of breaks it down. Like, what if a little piece of him was stuck in the real world, you know, when the gate got closed?
Yeah, because Max is arguing like, well, the demodogs died. Like, when the brain dies, the body dies. But we kind of know what's going on with the Russians and the gate. But, like, at this point in the show, you don't really know that yet. So it's like, well, why is this happening? Why has this come back? But the boys, the kids are basically like, well, we have to assume the worst. We have to assume that he's back. And then they kind of make the inference that if he's back, he's going to want a new host. And then that gets the girls kind of thinking, like, what would it look like for somebody to be a host for this mind flayer?
Not a handsome douchebag, you know, lifeguard. Not at all. Goes to Hopper and Joyce arriving at the mayor's office, and Hop basically barges in and locks the door behind him. And he tells Mayor Klein he's looking for a guy. And I do love, like, it kind of like the shot of him from the other day, like, waiting, and you hear the boom, boom, boom of the, you know, the military boots. And he's like, possibly ex-military, bike helmet, you know, dark hair. And the mayor kind of does a shitty job lying, saying that it was a maintenance guy. Yeah. And which I'm like, dude, really? That's the best you could do? And Hop kind of calls him out on this, since the guy was coming out of his office. And then he starts bringing up all the times that Hop has covered for him. Such as, you know, catching him and Candace, his secretary, you know, with all that, you know, white powder on his nose. You know, does his wife know about that? And they're kind of like going back and forth. And I love that the mayor fires back to Hopper's history of drugs and alcohol abuse. And the mayor gets kind of smug and threatens that one call to Tom down at the post, and he's history. And then makes the fatal mistake of taking things one step too far. He tells him, don't give me that dead daughter sob story, because I just don't care. And I just love the look of Hopper's eyes, like, getting huge, like, okay, let's fucking go. And he gets up and he just slams the mayor against the door. And Candace tries to open the door when she hears the yelling and the struggle on the other side. And I love that she goes to reach for the phone, and Joyce just like unplugs the phone. She's like, who are you going to call? The cops? Which, yeah, that's true. And Hopper starts punching Larry a few times, and then he threatens to use the cigar cutter to cut his finger off, which, and the mayor swears that he doesn't know his name, but that he brings him money and presents sometimes, and that he works for Star Court, and that they wanted to expand into East Hawkins. And the mayor, you know, leaned on some people, usually farm owners, to basically sell the land and stuff. And Hopper demands to see the records of the land purchases. And Larry tries to warn him that these are not people you want to mess with. And they end up dragging a pretty messed up looking Mayor Klein out. And I love Hopper telling Candace, oh, no, he's fine. You know, he just hit his head. And Joyce wishing her a good day.
Yeah, there was a couple other parts from that scene that I thought were hilarious, because it was a very, like, well executed, like, scene too. But when it got violent before Larry started, like, admitting to it, he was like, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, which was just such a funny reference, because he is definitely supposed to, like, that character is supposed to, like, be reminiscent of, like, that 80s, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger movie type guy. And also when Larry says that he gets gifts from someone who works at Star Court, Hopper's presents. Like, who is this guy? Santa Claus?
So good.
So I just, like, love that scene, and, like, how, like, they kind of, Hopper tries to, like, get it out of Larry with just, like, that blackmail type, like, this is what I know about you, but unfortunately, like, they both have shit on each other, so it kind of escalates to violence. But it's a really, like, intense scene, but, like, has a lot of, like, comedic moments.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Nancy and Jonathan, who are driving away from getting fired. And this is another really intense scene, because Nancy is complaining I feel like we've had at least one other conversation with them while they're driving and just kind of like not really being on the same page about like this job. And Nancy is saying her favorite word, that it's all bullshit. And this is where she says she thought Tom was on drugs.
Yeah, like, I think he was on drugs. He was all sweaty, you know?
Yeah.
And poor Jonathan, who's like the kid of logic. He just gets
super upset with her.
Yeah. And he makes like, he literally is like, I told you to quit the story. We were interns, Nancy. And she says something like, it's a summer job. Your life isn't hardly over. And he proves a good point, like mortgage, bills, this and that. It's stuff that you don't have to worry about, but I do. And she kind of fires back like, here comes the Oliver Twist routine. So you know that this might have been an argument before where, you know, Jonathan actually, he comes from a lower class family and he actually does have to like work in order to help his mom out. Nancy doesn't really have to. So it's, you see both sides of the argument 100%, but he kind of like, Jonathan kind of like holds a mirror up to her being like, you want everything handed to you on a silver platter, you know? And he's like, you do live in a bubble, you know? And he basically mentions that his dad's not around anymore and stuff, doesn't make the six, you know, figures and stuff. And she right away is like, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't realize I lived in a bubble. And he's like, well, you do, you know? And it's kind of like, he kind of tells her, like, this is what real life is like. And she kind of, you know, the music gets kind of somber. And she's like, I guess we just don't understand. What does she say? Like, I guess we just don't.
Yeah, I guess we just don't understand each other. And it's true. They're coming from it from two different, like, viewpoints. Because Nancy has that struggle of, like, being a woman and not being respected.
Exactly.
And she tells him that he doesn't understand what it's like.
You don't understand. Yep.
He's a man. Like, they weren't asking Jonathan to go do coffee runs and stuff like that. But then Jonathan is also telling her that she doesn't understand like the like financial part of it and like being from a different kind of like income bracket. Like, so
it's heartbreaking,
the struggles of that,
because you're so used to them being a power couple. And this, I actually like that the Duffer Brothers did this, because they kind of showed warts and all. That, yeah, they are this in love couple, but couples fight. And, you know, even though I know I give Nancy a lot of shit, I see her side of things, her being like, that was humiliating. That wasn't a job. You know, that was, they were borderline harassing her every day. And then Jonathan, on the other hand, well, what is he going to do now? He feels screwed. So kind of just, you know, her looking out the window, trying not to cry. It breaks my heart, because right away you're like, is there trouble in paradise? And then the shot of her coming home and clearly, girl got canned. She's got all her belongings and, you know, her personal belongings in a cardboard box. And, you know, Karen's vacuuming and she's like, oh, you know, I didn't expect you home so early. And she's like, yeah, light day. And it's almost like instantly Karen knows something's up. Breaks my heart.
So we cut to Robin also riding her bike. Lots of bike riding in this episode again. And she's heading back to the mall. And we find out that she went to the county recorder's office and gave them $20 to, and they gave her the blueprints of the mall, which show kind of all of the hallways and stuff in the mall. But then she goes to the other page and which there's no hallways to get into this secret room, but she sees the air ducts, and that was kind of like the inspiration that she had. And apparently the air ducts do lead into this secret room.
Cookie.
And it was really hard for me to keep calling this a room, because, you know, we know it's the elevator, but like at this point it's just a room.
Just a room. So what happens when she shows, like, she got emotions to the air duct, you know, being like...
So this is, like, one of the best scenes in the season.
Mm-hmm.
But Dustin's, like, convinced that he can fit. So first we see Steve get up there on the ladder and take it off with his screwdriver
in
his
mouth. The shot of him with a flashlight just going, I'm not too sure, man.
Yeah. But
super tight.
Dustin tries to get in there and... he's not really fitting, but like he's talking about how like he has no collarbones and like he'll be able to fit. And so Robin is confused and Steve is kind of like trying to explain like Dustin's condition, which is like the thing that Gaten actually in real life has. And Steve is like, he's missing bones and he can bend like gumbo. and
you mean Gumby.
Robin. Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure it's Gumbo. So then Dustin is like, Steve, shut up and push me. He's like, push my ass, touch my butt. I don't care. So it's just chaos.
Him
basically
screaming. And then you just hear like Steve going, I have terrible footing. And just Robin just shaking her head, watching this chaos unfold.
Yeah.
Perfection.
Yeah. And then we hear a ding, ding bell in the background. And Robin gets another little idea. You can tell as she looks at Erica.
Come and serve me my samples. Yeah. Thank God for Robin.
For
they would
cream.
Still be arguing, those two.
Yeah.
You know?
Robin's definitely the brains behind this whole Scoops Troop operation, yeah, for sure.
Oh, my God. So at the pool, Billy looks ridiculous. He's wearing a lifeguard hoodie, a Niagara Falls trucker hat, sunglasses, and he's enjoying an icy from the 7-Eleven. And I love with it's the kids. They're in the parking lot kind of using the binoculars, watching him. And right away, Max is like, well, what's the matter with this? He looks totally normal. He's lounging by the pool. And I love Lucas being like, you know, how normal is it? How many times have you seen him with his actual shirt on? And Max is expressing being like, yeah, it is a little odd. And Will says that the Mind Flayer likes to hide. He lies dormant. And that they need to find a way to activate him. And Mike then kind of like brainstorms something and gets an idea. And I do love when he's like, boys only. And Max and Elle are like, are you kidding me? And he's like, you know, just trust me. And they run to the sauna, which...
Yeah, they go into the men's locker room.
Man.
And then go into the sauna. There's a lot of men enjoying that sauna.
A lot
sauna.
Of men. And I love them going like, shut the door. Like, such an older man thing. Like, when I was growing up, my dad's big thing was shut the door. You're going to let the AC out. What are you trying to air condition the whole neighborhood? So I could only imagine if that man was around a sauna. You got to keep the door shut. So
yeah.
Right away, Lucas is like, I think I just threw up in my mouth. And they find out it goes up to like 280 degrees, which wowza. And they're like, this will be hot enough to activate the Mind Flayer from Billy.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's how they got the Mind Flayer out of Will, was mm-hmm. like the heat in the cabin and the fire and stuff. So we cut back to the mall and Erica's up on the ladder and she's looking into the air ducts and she's like basically telling them that she can definitely fit. But
doesn't know
she
wants
to know
to.
what's in it for her.
Smart girl.
So we cut to, this is such a funny scene because they're all sitting at the table and there's just all of these ice cream delights in
yep.
front of her and Steve like pushing the ice cream
USS
across
butterscotch.
The table to her and she's like, what does she ask for? Like,
no
more fudge,
fudge, please. Yeah.
But she starts going on this whole speech about how it's child endangerment
yep.
and just basically wanting more for her money. Kind of thing, like, because she's not telling them that she doesn't want to do it. She's just trying to see how much she can get.
Just sweet like, the deal, no
yeah,
pun intended.
Exactly.
And I love that Dustin's like patriotic speech. You know,
yeah.
he's like, "Don't you want to do this for your country?" And she's like, "You can't spell America without Erica." It takes him a minute. He's like, "Yeah, you're actually right." But I love that right away. Like, she's like, "Oh, I just got the chills from this or shake, not from your speech." And she kind of like states like, I want free ice cream for life, which good for her, you know?
Yeah. She says it multiple times in this episode. Free ice cream for life.
Life.
It's so iconic. How did you feel about the mayor's house? Because that style, I felt like it was very Stacy coded.
It's very Stacy coded. You know that they're probably Italian. You know, I would have been like, this is gorgeous. Like, the big giant zebra, this is what kills me when right away he's like, oh, you know, did kill that? And right away he's like, that's fake. And you hear Hopper go, no shit. In my head, I'm like, I'd have something like that in my fucking
yeah.
house.
The bamboo wallpaper was
yep.
actually beautiful. It
gorgeous.
Made me think of that wallpaper in the bathroom at Denver.
You and I would not shut up about those flamingo wallpaper. We loved it. But yeah, well, the mayor's house is quite fancy. And I do love that as, you know, kind of like he marches the mayor into his bedroom to go get the files, Joyce stops and she sees like almost like maps that are like framed in the hallway. And she points out to Hopper that that's Southeast Hawkins, not Lover Lake, but
Jordan Lake.
Jordan Lake, Stacy. Get it right. And they're right by the power plant. And Joyce believes that this so-called machine is at one of these properties. And I do love that, like, Hop right away is like, why don't you come to work for me, you know?
Yeah, because he's changing his tune. Because earlier in the episode, he was like, you should stick to sales. And now he's like, oh, like, that actually was pretty smart, Joyce.
This is what I kind of like, women kind of showing that they are the brains once in a while, you know, that they, you know, that men need to shut the fuck up for once and listen, because they're like, no, actually, look, I'm noticing something you would have never even noticed. And while that's happening, he catches the mayor trying to do a really piss poor job escaping.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Whoops.
But this next scene, again, like you said, this whole episode has sort of a, you know, girl power theme going on here. Mm-hmm. But Karen goes to check on Nancy and she ends up like coming out of her room and you can tell she's upset. And so she goes downstairs and her mom makes her some tea. But like, this is just like the best. This is like top tier Karen Wheeler. Like,
this goes to show you, and I'm glad that they didn't just put her as like the MILF, you know, like in the background that almost screwed Billy. Because in season one and two, she constantly keeps telling Nancy and Mike, I'm here, you can talk to me. She tries to really make that adamant. And I like that they have this heart to heart. And I mentioned to you when we do eventually cover the Nightmare on Elm Street scenes, Brandy, our friend, pointed this out. There's a very similar scene where the lead character talks to her mother in the first Elm Street. And she's like, Nancy, you face things, which is like word from word what Karen says to her. But I like that she kind of almost gives her the confidence in realizing, like, you know, I want you, if you truly do believe in this story and you think there was more than meets the eye, then go after it, you know, because how good will that feel to, you know, prove all these guys wrong when you sell it to some big magazine or turn it into a book, you know? And it's almost like just that really nice motherly advice that, like, kind of, I think Nancy needed at that moment, because already with her fight with Jonathan and getting fired and getting screamed at by Tom, she wasn't feeling very confident. And that gave her the confidence that she needed again.
Oh, yeah. And I have to like point out like the great comedic timing, too, with like Karen saying like she doesn't know where she got it from. Nancy's like, Dad. No, and then Nancy's like, no, Mom, like, I got it from you. Like, Karen does say that she thinks she was swapped in the hospital, which I don't know. Why was that like a thing when we were kids? Like,
oh,
was
my
there
God.
Like that was like,
it was like the biggest fear.
Yes, exactly. Like, I don't know why that was like such a thing in like 80s and 90s culture.
Like, I know parents that literally like would take a marker and like make a marker on their kid so they knew it was there. So I'm like, did mix-ups happen that often? Like, damn.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they did. And that's a, like one of those lines that I'm always like, is that going to come back later and like be like a plot point in the story?
Imagine. Jesus.
But she also says that she's proud of Nancy for standing up to those shitheads.
Nancy's
like, Mom.
Love that.
So those were just some like cute moments in that conversation. It's definitely a great scene.
So the kids are trying to prepare to trap Billy, and Lucas tries to apologize to Will in the supply shed while Will is getting like chained to hold the door. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just such a like painful kind of awkward scene, because Lucas, you can tell, really does feel bad. And Will is like, just forget about it. I really just don't care anymore. And like Lucas tries to be like, it was a really cool campaign. And just Will is like, no, we're all business right now. We have to take care of this right now.
Yeah. I did appreciate, though, that Lucas was trying to apologize.
He knew, like, they messed up, especially by his reaction, you know, and how they probably found him the night before. And then we see in the other, like, almost like chemical closet, Elle finds this CPR dummy, which I had no idea how expensive those were. Oh, my God. Like,
really?
Oh, my God. They are, like, I don't know how much they were back in the 80s, but either they say this to us so, like, we don't, like, do WWE, like, moves on them. But basically, one of the dummies that we used to practice with was, like, $25,000. said
That's
they were
insane.
Like, don't break it. I'm like, so yeah, a little nerve wracking, but I love that Elle finds it. And I'm like, man, Hawkins got some big money thrown around those expensive CPR dummies, but whatever. We saw the snowball dance, you know, the town budget could be looked into. And Mike kind of comes up behind her and tries to explain that, you know, he kind of lied about Nana and that it was Hop that was behind the whole thing. And Elle kind of shows that she's a strong, independent woman. She don't need no man. And she basically is like, what if Hop's right? And I love that he's like, he's just a miserable man that hates joy. And she kind of brings up the whole, like, species thing, being like, well, if I'm my own species, which Mike looks horrified, being like, you broke the rules, you spied on me. And she's like, I make my own rules. She just kind of walks out, which is just such a badass, like, boss girl move.
Right. But the whole time, though, Mike was not saying those magic words.
Nope.
And it was a contrast, because actually you see Lucas actually making an attempt to apologize, to say he's sorry.
Mike is trying to onto Hopper, which
exactly
Elle can see that. She could smell that a mile away. Yeah. And then my kind of heart broke at this when Max by herself, she's still in the parking lot with the binoculars looking at Billy, and just her saying almost more out loud to herself, God, I hope it's not you. I really hope it's not you.
Yeah.
And that creepy shot of Billy, you know, rocking the aviators. We know Stace loves her pair of aviators, flipping open and close the Zippo lighter.
Yeah. And it's like, it makes when you think about like the whole Dear Billy stuff in season four, like even more heartbreaking when you remember that like Max didn't get along with Billy, but she really didn't want him to be
something bad like, to happen to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And it ended up happening. Like, so that was tough. But we get to the evening, so it's dark, and Erica is getting ready to go into the air ducts while the others are like out on the roof, and she ends up crawling through the tunnels, and we cut back from that scene to Larry's house, where
his wife is back,
Winnie,
from Jazzercise.
Yeah.
Winnie. Yeah.
But and he just screams at her to get the phone, but I don't think I ever noticed. I'm pretty sure Winnie is one of the women that Karen was hanging out with at the pool, right? So it was just funny that she was one of Karen's friends, and she's actually like the stepmom in Outer Banks.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
I've yet to watch that show. But I'm sorry, like, I'm such a petty bitch. Like, if my husband was found, first of all, like, you know, with a broken nose, handcuffed to our freaking, like, you know, bedpost, and right away I'd be like, what have you been up to? But him screaming like, get me a goddamn phone, I would hold things up. I'd literally have one hand on my hip going, let's try that again, ask me again in a more polite manner. Literally the mayor would have never been able to alert, you know, the bad guys, because I would have been like, let's try that in a nicer tone, Larry. So that always just really pisses me off. I'm like, don't get him the fucking phone. But we go to Hop's truck, and it's arriving at one of the abandoned properties, and Joyce and him use flashlights, and they're looking around. They start ticking off places off a list, and they're heading to the Hess farm next.
Yeah. And then we get back to Erica. She arrives at the room, and she gets down. She opens the door, and
any booby traps?
Confuses. Yeah, it's funny. There were no booby traps yet, I guess, but it always really confuses me how she was able to open the door, and then like later the door doesn't open. I don't know. That was always like something
thing.
That,
yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Like, how come she was able to open the door, but then later when they try to open the door, it doesn't open. But anyway, I love how she opens the door and she's like, free ice cream
for life.
But this when they go back to the pool, I just love the shot of like the pool at night. It's like a very quick shot.
Very creepy.
But yeah, it's cool.
And Billy is showering and he heads to the locker room and he's just raw dogging those jeans. Like nothing.
Yeah, he's
wet,
soaking wet.
Not even dried off, and just hops into his jeans. I'm like, it's kind of sexy, but kind of like unsettling. I'm like, girl, you're going to chafe. And he hears the door, and like somebody's at the door, and he kind of yells out, pool's closed. And then he hears it again, and he loses his temper quite quickly.
And he's going to yell at whoever it is to discover that the only way out is locked. And Mike starts to taunt him by calling him a piece of shit. Maybe that was a little too far. I would have been like, easy. Like, this guy's possessed. And he's having a little too much fun while doing it.
Yeah. The voice is funny.
Billy thinks it's a prank. And he starts looking for who it is, looking around. And after a few minutes, he spots the person, which, what the fuck was up with that excited little clap?
I know. He's so creepy.
That was a Teen Wolf moment. I was like, that gave me the ick.
He's like, he got so excited that he got the person. Like,
I'd be like, I'd give us away. I'd be like, what the fuck was that? We'd be hiding. You'd just hear me say that. And he goes into the sauna room and these kids are really good. These kids gave Kevin McAllister, the kid from Home Alone, a run for their money.
Yeah.
Because it's like hanging by a ripcord on the light and it reveals to be the CPR doll, the $25,000 CPR doll with the tape recorder to it, and the lights come on and Al calls out, hey, and when he turns around, and I'm sorry, she very aggressively tosses his ass to the wall.
Yeah, yeah. But I love how when he lifts up the dummy, the CPR dummy, he's already kind of like lifting it up like Darth Vader / Vecna style. Like,
look at you. Look at you. I knew you were going to get that.
But they lock him in and he acts kind of like he's sad to see Max like standing there with them.
Yeah,
kind of
he's like
betrayed.
Gags that she's with them. I'm like, she took a nail bat almost to your crotch. Like, are you that surprised?
And she's the one who says, do it. And then Will goes and turns up the heat.
Which I hate the humidity. Like, man, I would have just died. They would have actually committed
a murder. I love a sauna.
But in my, really? Oh, girl. But I gotta say, like, part of me was almost like, this was for Steve, because, you know, he nearly killed Steve. But it's, you know, it's really scary, too, especially when, like you said, he does realize Max is amongst them. So we then go to Nancy. She's at Hawkins General, and she lies that she is Mrs. Drisco's granddaughter. And I love the shot of the one petal falling off the flower, the little bouquet of flowers that she got.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, girl, you're dancing with fate. Like, what if fucking Miss Drisco's family was there, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe she went about it the wrong way, but whatever. You know, Nancy Drew. And Miss Drisco's asleep, but her heart monitor shows that her pulse is kind of like ticking up. And Nancy is looking at her charts. What happens next?
Just fun fact. One time when I was in, like, Georgia and like going to filming locations, I went to like where they filmed that, the outside of that hospital scene. Mm. But it's literally just like a business park, and there's just like this awning that they like put the emergency room sign on.
Gagged.
And so when Nancy like pulls up in the station wagon, like that's like the scene like of where they filmed that.
I really
that
like
hospital
that.
Scene.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's funny because like the one place was like a church that they filmed a hospital scene, and then this one was like a business park. Like, so funny. But we go back to the room at the mall.
This is a good shot.
Yeah, I love this scene again. Like, they open one of the boxes. So Steve's opening it up and he opens it and there's like a metal box inside. They take the top off of the box. And I love Steve, like, that's definitely not Chinese food. And he's about to like open it further. And he kind of tells them to stand back a little bit, and the girls move. But this is like one of the best lines, and hopefully not foreshadowing in any sort of way.
No.
But Dustin won't move, and he's like, you die, I die. And Steve's like, okay. But like, it's also just very sweet. Like,
so sweet.
And I love kind of like, I think, you know, I'm projecting, but like, that probably meant a lot to Steve. Like,
only child. I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So he sweet. Pulls this like canister out, and it's like that green goo. I don't know how else to describe it. But then this is when like the room starts to kind of like jostle.
It shifts. Yeah.
And Erica's like, booby traps, I told you. And this is where they try to open the door again, but this time it does not open.
You've never seen quite panic like them all trying to get the door to open.
Yeah. Like just pushing the button over and over again. Like that's like a common thing with like Steve and this crew of just like flipping the light switch and pushing the button at the lab. Like,
yeah.
But it, you realize that it's an elevator and that elevator goes down fast. Like
it plummets.
It was, yeah, yeah. Scary
and I love
shit.
Steve looking up going, oh shit. And you just see the shot of it going down. You're like, so
yeah,
ooh, that was a good cliffhanger with that. And yeah, we see that Mrs. Driscoll's pulse is off the charts. The nurse apparently is on the horn talking about, you know, her sister's like, you know, 4th of July barbecue meal. So she isn't coming. And we cut back to Billy. He's, you know, slamming against the glass, demanding to be let out. And the kids look pretty terrified. And they've reached 220. And Billy falls over and he starts saying over and over again, like how sorry he is and that it's not his fault. And, you know, Max, of course, feels terrible and she feels bad. And she walks over looking in through the window and Billy's saying that he's done really bad things, really terrible things that he didn't want to do and that he made him do it. And he feels like there's a shadow, which I guess this brings up the argument that that was the real Billy poking through, I guess.
Yeah, like it's interesting to kind of figure out, because we know from season two with Will that like they both can kind of exist at the same time.
Yeah.
Because like the Mind Flayer, a lot of times I like start to say Vecna, but like the Mind Flayer was possessing him in the shed, but like Will was able to be cognizant enough to like be doing the Morse code to like give them that message. And in this scene it almost seemed like that was actually Billy, but like the Mind Flayer was the one kind of like making him grab that
grab the tile. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of hard to figure out like, was that really Billy or was it like just the Mind Flayer like trying to manipulate them into believing like and letting them out, letting him out.
Which
so,
thank God, like right away Will kind of feels like him get activated. So maybe, you know, was, you know, the Mind Flayer kind of coming booting up and he touches the back of his neck and you see Mike notices and he screams to Max to get away from the door and she doesn't jump back a second too soon because he, like, it is a pop out. He smashes through the window. And yeah. I know we've mentioned this in our Dacre episode. This is the only time you can hear his Australian accent come out. And the only time the word fuck has been used in the entire show. He says, I'll fucking cut you. And it sounds so Australian. And it's not even funny. But I guess like those were the kids' real reaction because they didn't expect him to jump through the way he did. And it's fucking terrifying, to be completely honest.
Yeah. And I mean, the only thing that saves Max almost is Lucas uses the slingshot and kind of gets him. And you see like the black veins. But then at that same moment, we cut back to Mrs. Driscoll.
Yeah.
So you kind of are seeing again the way that they're connected because Mrs. Driscoll is having this reaction because of what's going on with Billy. Because they're all connected by that hive mind. So she's also getting like the black veins.
Like you said, they're all connected. Like it's almost like a hive mind, which it was the entire hospital staff out on a cigarette break, apparently.
Right. Because Nancy's like pressing that call button and nobody's coming.
Nobody's paying attention. So, they were in the toilet. Yeah. But like, I feel bad. Like Billy, like when he falls back, when he first gets hit with the slingshot, he starts to like convulse a little bit and almost like puke up the stuff, which I think is meant to be the chemicals he's been ingesting. So it's a really cool like montage of Billy slamming himself against the door multiple times and Mrs. Driscoll screaming up at Nancy with all the black veins and the black eyes. And finally, Billy slams out of the room and Eleven stands in front of the kids. And she uses her powers to slam a barbell against his throat, pinning him to the wall. And the scary thing is, and you can tell by the expression on all their faces, he's stronger than what they believed. And he's able to actually throw the barbell off.
Yeah. So then he starts to choke out 11. And they're all sort of just watching terrified. And the only one who takes action is Mike. So Mike has a little bit of a hero moment here and like comes and hits Billy from behind. But then he comes for Mike. So then Elle fights back again. It's a very intense and very like, again, well executed like fight scene. But Elle gets him up in the air and ends up throwing him through the brick wall, which is just like
the swell
insane.
Of the music. And like,
yeah,
Millie's acting is incredible because she looks like she's using all of her power. Her face is all flushed and she's screaming. And when we visited the pool, I kept making this joke to Megan. I kept going like, I wonder which wall Billy was slammed through the wall, you know?
Yeah. Even though we decided that like those locker rooms were definitely like a different set. Like.
Oh, yeah.
But Mike comforts her. And then we see Billy actually gets up and like when they look outside, they're watching him run away. Like he is not human anymore to survive that.
No, if you went through a brick wall, which I do love about the scene is like, first of all, the music is absolutely beautiful. And everybody knows the fun facts that Millie was so into character, her like almost collapsing backwards against Finn and him kind of almost checking off camera. That wasn't scripted. She was just that into the moment and stuff. So pretty cool that they caught that on camera. But I do love that Billy like clearly isn't human, but I do love that like that grimace that he makes. Like it's almost like he's hissing out in pain when he first gets up as the dust clears. And nobody could have survived that. That's human. And he kind of limps out of the parking lot into the woods, and we start hearing like big band music playing as the kids are looking through the Billy size hole in the wall, like, did that just happen?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a funny song. I don't know what the song is. It's like an old time song. We'll meet again is like the lyric that you hear. But in season four, it kind of mirrors this scene when they kind of get Vecna and they like get him through the attic in the Creel house.
Yes.
And falls down. But then like when they go to look out, like he's gone kind of thing. So mm-hmm. those two scenes always kind of remind me of each other as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
The final scene is we're back and Billy is back with Heather and he's kind of talking to her, and Heather asks if it was her, and he says it was, and that she knows now about him and that she could have killed him.
Mm.
And Heather's like, well, yeah, but she can't kill us. And then you end up seeing who she's talking about when she says us is this whole fucking army of zombies, basically.
So swaying back and forth, singing that song, like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And the shadow monster is also there. So he's basically has like created at this point that army that he saw in the vision of like what he was supposed to make.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the culmination of this, like, ever since Billy first like crashed his car and like had to like be taken over by this monster.
Such a good episode.
Yeah. I think definitely one of the best of season three.
Oh, absolutely.
Season three is just awesome. I love season three so much. So it was fun to chat about. I love how dark some of it is, but also it's still like balanced by like that like
it's humor,
comedy.
Sparkle, but...
Yeah, yeah, which is something like I guess I miss sometimes about like season four. I guess it's still there a little bit, but it's definitely not as prominent. Like
exactly,
where you're making those that lightheartedness to kind of balance out the darkness. But and I don't know, season five, man, are we gonna get anything?
Oh
like
my
it's
god,
just gonna be like
looks bleak as hell. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh my god,
I like, are we gonna even enjoy it? And that's the thing, like people are talking about like, you know, people dying and how we're gonna be so sad, and it's like, they're really gonna do that to us on fucking Christmas? That's what I mean.
I
like
no dude.
Like, are they really trying to ruin our lives at the holidays? Like,
I'm gonna be just crying in my eggnog. It's gonna be a mess.
That's it for our season three deep dive today. So let's get into this filming updates segment has kind of like transitioned into like production updates, and now it can officially be sort of promo updates.
I know.
So we did get some new season 5 footage finally. The teaser trailer was majority cut, scenes cut from the first 4 seasons of the show.
Yeah.
But do you want to just go through some of the scenes that we saw in the teaser trailer that are new? So what are some that you remember?
I know one is it's footage of Joyce talking to Will, and it's her saying that she like will never forget the night that he was first taken. And it's her talking to him. And then there's like a scene of her holding up an axe, and there's like kids behind her in front of a barn. I noticed that.
Yeah, they're definitely in a barn. And it's almost, it reminded me again of like season 1 when she's got the axe and like something's coming through the wall.
Yeah.
Now it's like something coming through like the side of the barn.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting. We also have Karen Wheeler hugging Holly.
Holding Holly, yep.
Which I called the fact that like Holly was going to be in this teaser.
Yeah,
like,
you did.
So that was really interesting. But like also, you know, we talked about Karen in this episode and that supportive mom, like Holly's her baby. Like
mm-hmm.
that's an intense like shot for sure.
I'm nervous because they for both, her, to be honest.
They both seem like terrified.
Yeah.
Jeez. That's a death I could see.
I could see
happening.
Her like sacrificing herself to save her baby. And I'm like,
yeah, that would be devastating because like that is one of the pillars of this show. Like just Joyce and Karen and like that mother's love.
A mother's love. Yeah. And I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised if we do see something, let it be Joyce sacrificing herself for Will or Karen sacrificing herself for her kids. Devastating if that's the fact.
Yeah. Oh, man. We see Max in her hospital bed still. But
no
does
cast
it look like,
on.
Yeah, her cast is off, but she's still kind of like got the breathing tube in her nose. And Lucas is right there with her, like right by her side. But do you see what else is by her side?
All I saw was the
a radio.
Is there a radio? Because I saw there was the picture.
There's a radio.
Oh, you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe, so you know, he puts on Rocking Robin for her.
Yeah, it's interesting that there's a radio right there.
What else do we see?
Do you also, I think that we see this in season 4 too, right? That he has like the little drawing.
That's what I was
going to
mention. Yeah, I love that that's still there.
Was that up in season 4?
You see it hanging up.
Yeah.
Then we see
our boys.
Our boys.
Our best duo. Steve and Dustin, they're like, I don't know where they are. There looks like there's vines, so I guess they're in the
upside down. Yeah.
There's like a tile floor, so maybe like the lab, but they've got their flashlights and they're looking up, which is interesting. There was a couple shots with Hopper and Elle. The one where she's kind of like screaming and it seems like something's like in her head. But then I also didn't even realize until a couple people like posted like a lightened version of the shot. But like when they're looking at that big wall of vines, that's Hopper and Elle also.
Yeah, I didn't realize either. Which what the hell is that?
Yeah, it's so gross. And there's like this like light part.
I think we're going to have more, like you said, body horror. We're going to have more of the slime and grossness and stuff.
Yeah,
the stuff
that I hate about season 3.
Exactly.
But like,
it's going to be cranked up to 11 this season, I bet.
Ugh. Yeah, yeah. Then there's this shot of Mike, like, protecting, like, these kids.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that, which I was like, good for you, Mike, like, standing up a little bit, you know?
And then do you think that that's Will kind of like leaning on Joyce like that?
Maybe.
You can't really tell.
I know there's that new kid.
But did you see this? There's like a dead soldier on the ground, like right beside them in that shot. And then we've got like the shots of like all the soldiers with that thing coming up out of the ground, which you had an interesting theory.
I have a theory. You've heard it now. We're recording this. What's the day? We're June 1st, you know, 2025.
2:30 p.m.
2:30 p.m. I'm calling it now. It's Cass.
I told her when she told me this that this is reminiscent of her thinking that the American was Billy.
Don't rent on my parade, girlfriend. Like, I'm telling you, wouldn't that be the biggest thing, that there's some big unseen thing and it's banging and it's got strength and the military's trying to keep it under wraps and ends up being Joseph Quinn with fucking wings? I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised at this point, which if that's true, the gloating I will do will be insufferable. You've heard it here first, guys.
I love it. I'm here for it. Yes, because something's coming out from like the floor.
Yeah.
And then we have this epic scream, and I love that they put this in this trailer because I'm pretty sure this is what that leaked scene was.
Yeah,
where it's basically Will screaming this blood curdling scream, run, like it's intense.
It better not be directed to who I think it's directed to. But I think either way, it is terrifying because Noah acts his ass off, and that is just bone chilling.
Yeah. So lots of cool stuff. Again, I almost like don't want to look at any of this, like, because going into season four completely blind was what kind of like made me be such a big fan of this show, because it was what got my brain stuck on it, like, because of that experience. So it's like going to be such a different experience, sort of like overanalyzing every little thing, which is why I try not to like,
I'm the same
way, too much. Yeah. Like, so it's fun to think about it a little bit and then just be like, okay, I'll see it when I see it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. We're going to try to stay like neutral a little bit. I mean, I'm sure we'll break down a teaser or an actual trailer, but we're people that don't like stuff spoiled for us. I was really good about season four, and only one major thing was spoiled for me, which I was pissed about, Billy, which I was like, are you kidding me? But besides that, I kind of kept my head in the sand about it, and it was so much worth it because you didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, so satisfying.
Your stomach was in knots, you know, and that's what we want. We want to be sitting by our Christmas trees having panic attacks, so bring it on.
So let's do a quick little merch segment. So do you have anything you wanted to talk about?
Sure. So for merch, I did a trade recently with my friend Mark from Canada, and he traded me an unopened, I took a picture of it on my Instagram not too long ago, of a Comic-Con exclusive season 3 shirt. And the packaging is adorable. It's in an ice cream truck with Steven and Rob as like pops. Robin. And it's really, really cute. And like I said, it's unopened. And the shirt was in my size, but I'm never going to open it because I'm that guy. But it was just really adorable that it's a little ice cream truck of theirs. And if you look on it, they show like little ice creams in the shape of their heads. Really cute. Just always cool to find collectible items that are that old. From the shop EM Snart, another bite. Buttons. They are making a bunch of another bite off Joe Keery's tour. And I got the Apple button, which I thought was adorable. So they're excited about that. And I know Blue Mail, even though I'm not going to these, I did get another bite ticket that looks like there's bites made out of it. Cause I'm like, that's adorable. And I just think it's cool that small businesses like Blue Mail do stuff like that when typically venues don't offer physical copies of actual tickets. So I think when you're done doing all your tours, you're going to definitely have to, you know, catch up on getting your tickets and make a nice little scrapbook or frame them all, you know, whatever you want to do. And then, of course, our zine came in from Coop de Maine. Mr. Joe Keery, mine came in. Yours will be coming in shortly. It is packed full of goodies and extras. I already framed my poster. They paid a lot of attention to detail, and it is just pure, like, you know, visual eye candy for any Joe fan out there.
Yeah, I am so grateful that you bought me one. I'm
Merry
still
Christmas.
Like super excited. Yeah, I have my like birthday present from you already. I have my Christmas present from you already.
You got it, girl.
but I have a lot of people have been posting theirs, and I'm trying not to like
Don't look too much. Yeah.
Too much at I obviously I've seen it, but I'm trying not to like look too hard at them because when I get it, I want to like be kind of like surprised.
It's packed
and
full
have
of goodies. You'll love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm super excited. That'll be fun. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much it for today.
I think that's it. And it's good to be going back to the deep, deep, deep dives.
Yeah, we love our Lover's Lake episodes, and we hope that you are happy to dive in with us. And yeah, we're going to continue this for the month. It'll be another fun Stranger Things summer, our last Stranger Things summer. That's kind of sad.
I know. Can you believe it? We're going to have to live it up. Summer of Skull Rock.
Summer of Skull Rock. Absolutely. All right. Well, until next time, over and out.
Over and out.
Eddie, I'm not sure if I love the idea of you driving.
Oh, I'm starting to suffer. Harrington's got it. And it's a big boy.
All right, so we're back.
We're back.
This is our secret study segment where we talk about fan fiction, especially Steve Harrington and Eddie Munson, aka Steady. I'm sure that you've been here before, but if for some reason this is the first time you're tuning in, we know that fan fiction is not for everyone, so feel free to peace out. We'll talk to you next week. But if you would like to hang out and hear about some things that we've been reading, feel free to stick around.
Beautiful.
I got that spiel down.
You got it, girl.
So, Stacey, anything fun that you've been reading this week?
So, I have been feeling a little under the weather, so I haven't really had a chance to read too much. But I have finally started Scorpio Skies. Oh, my God. Yep. When it's right, it's right. Just going to be plowing through that. Cannot wait. So there are a few other works from Anne Another Something that I definitely want to check out. But right now, I think I'm going to try to devote all of my time to Scorpio Skies because Az's work is just so consuming, but in the best way possible. So I'm very excited to start that and talk about that with you.
Yeah, you're going to love it because you love Billy and Billy is great in that fic. Like, So all three of them, Billy, Eddie, and Steve, are all very out of character in that story.
Yeah.
But that's interesting because we did get some news that Azriel Green is going to be turning Scorpio Skies into an actual novel.
Yeah.
Which is like huge. And I'm so excited for it because just her version of those three guys in that story is very unique. And there's elements that she kind of takes from like Stranger Things in the fan fiction version, but it's again, like they're very unique and I'm excited for that to be a novel and so pumped for her.
Me too.
That's very exciting. I'm a few chapters behind on Scorpio Skies just because it's ongoing and I'm okay with like not being like caught up because that means there's always more for me to read.
Exactly.
That's kind of how I feel about Prism too. So I'm going to get back to it soon. Speaking of Onion Chiver, Azriel, they do have a new story out. I'm not going to talk too much about the story because the dove is very, very dead. Dead dove, do not eat. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about it, but I love it because I love everything that they write. So the other story that I've been reading is Tuesday's Gone with the Wind by This Apple Pie Life. Again, I'm on the last chapter and I've kind of like slowed down because I'm like not ready for it to be over. This is what I do like every time I like
Sick
get
bastard.
Into like a long thick. But I'll probably finish it in the next couple of days. But I also listened to a podfic last weekend and finally folded my laundry because of this podfic, because sometimes I just need some motivation to sit there and fold all my clothes. And this was perfect. So the fic is, so the fic is You Ought to Know, which is also by This Apple Pie Life. It's a shorter story. And it's a two-part series called Jagged Little Pill. So the first one's You Ought to Know. And the second one is I'm Brave, But I'm Chicken Shit. And a friend of mine, Hello Moon, along with No Connections, made a podfic of this story. So I listened to You Ought to Know last weekend, and I just noticed today when I looked it up to talk about it that they put out the next part, the I'm Brave But I'm Chicken Shit. So I'm excited to listen to it, because it's a great podfic. The first part is like over an hour. The second part is like almost 2 hours.
What's the premise?
So not super long, but okay, so basically, Steve and Eddie are really good friends, but then like 10 years down the road, Eddie kind of disappears and like doesn't tell anybody that he's moving. Nobody knows where he is. And Steve is like devastated, basically.
Yeah.
And like, like all that angst that I love, you know, and I don't want to give too much away, but basically like you can pretty much put two and two together that like Steve doesn't, it takes until Eddie leaves for Steve to kind of like realize that he had feelings for him.
Aww.
And basically like the feelings that he had for Steve was like part of the reason he left. So it's kind of like, for a while, like, they're trying to figure out where he is, and, like, that's the first part of the story. Yeah, it's really good. And I'm super excited to listen to the second part, too. So, yeah, that's the podfic. And I didn't even know, I don't remember knowing about this story by This Apple Pie Life, because I feel like we're big fans of them. So,
yeah.
I was, like, so interested and,
nice little surprise,
excited that, they made this podfic. So
definitely
check it out. I might share it in my little broadcast channel too.
Please do.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it.
That's it.
Well, we'll talk to you next time, and peace.
Peace.
Or is it catch you on the flip side?
Catch you on the flip side?
I think that's it.
Damn.